Blog Talk Radio.
Have they sainted her yet?
I'm just assuming they grill it.
They ought to. How was your week?
My week was well. My week was well. How was your week, Ty?
You know, my week was well, too, Zito. It was well. I got to see you a couple times this week. You know, Zito and I, we teach some boxing and Muay Thai classes, so we get to see each other twice a week, and so it's always a pleasure.
Good. And why don't you give us, let's give a plug for the gym one more time.
It's called Evolve Fitness Studios, the name of the gym that we own. It is on Kirkwood Highway. Right behind Panera Bread. We've been open since June. We're having our grand opening October 3rd. We invite everybody to come down, get a little free food, do some free classes, and come learn about our gym, our facility.
Excellent. Let's, we started a week with a little controversy, huh, with the not only does Mosley not know if he's going to be able to fight, but now Mayorga lost $50,000 for coming in overweight.
Well, you know, initially it was scheduled for a catch weight of 158. Obviously, this is more of a grudge match. It's for the crowd. The weight really doesn't matter for this fight, so it was pushed to a weight of 166 when it was apparent that Mayorga was nowhere near making 158. Mayorga weighed in at 165. Shane Mosley weighed in at 159, so obviously he, you know, felt that there was no reason to make 168 either. So Shane Mosley weighed in at middleweight. Ricardo Mayorga weighed in at super middleweight. So we have these two guys fighting again. This is it makes no difference in the rankings in any particular weight division. So the weight doesn't matter to the fans who want to see the fight.
Right.
Not at all. These guys, they're coming in to basically throw punches and try to take each other's head off. And at this stage in their career, that's all they can really do. Technique is kind of out the window, especially for Shane Mosley, who more or less always fought with technique, to where Mayorga, he had a certain technique to do what he wanted to do. He was more unorthodox, to where Shane, he relied on reflexes, a lot of technique, but more technique implemented with his reflexes. And ever since his reflexes have gone, you can see a lot of his technique kind of was based on his reflexes.
And he's
still a strong and powerful guy, and he hits hard. I mean, and against a guy like Mayorga, there's always potential to get it there.
Yeah. And the thing too is like Zito said, you know, these guys are like 43 and 42 respectively. So, you know, at this point in time in their careers, they're not like 42 like Bernard Hopkins per se was 42. At this point in time in their careers, neither guy is sniffing a title shot at the moment, say for their name. You know, in the sport of boxing, if you have a big name, you can always get a shot with a couple of decent wins against, nondescript opposition if you look good. But the fact of the matter is that neither one of these guys is close to a title shot. So, again, weights don't matter. It's more about, you know, putting on a good fight for the fans. A lot of people thought their fight last time was awkward and kind of ugly, but, you know, it was entertaining, a fair specifically at the end with a last-second knockout. So, again, it's on pay-per-view. It's going opposite a free show with two prime guys on ESPN. So you're not so sure how many people will tune in. But, you know, I say why not? If the two guys want to fight, who cares? You know, if you want to watch it, watch it. If you think it's a disgrace to boxing, just don't watch it.
That, you brought up a good point. Who cares who wins this one? And, I can't understand why there's so much, animosity between Mosley and King. And, I realize it all comes down to the holy dollar. But
it seems like King, obviously he wasn't able to stop the fight, so.
Right.
You have to take it as a victory for the Shane Mosley promotional team and his team of lawyers to get this fight passed. How successful the fight sells on pay-per-view, that's another story. Do they make money off the fight? Again, that's another story. But, We do have a fight tonight, no matter what weight it is contested at.
Yeah, it might be proven that it costs more money to get the fight than the fight's going to make.
That's for sure.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah. Yeah. On the other side of the world, the on again, off again Jones Santiago fight is off again.
Yeah, that's off again, again. But you know what? I think the sad thing is the only people that know that that fight's been on and off and on and off outside of us are Roy Jones and the other fighter. Because at this point in time, unfortunately, you know, it's just Roy Jones fighting another nondescript opponent overseas. So nobody's paying attention. They were going to pay attention if he would have fought Huck, because he would be obviously fighting a world-rated cruiserweight, and a lot of people would have been concerned for his safety. But what Roy Jones has been doing has been beating up on Journeyman. He shows that he still can fight at a certain level. Whether he'd have been able to compete at a Marco Huck level is something totally different. But, yeah, he's another guy. Again, if you think it's shameful, just don't watch him. But, you know, the guy can obviously still go out and ply his trade at a certain level. Same thing with Shane Mosley and Ricardo Mayorga. What we're used to seeing is that once an athlete can't ply their trade at the highest levels, and that's been proven to them time and time again, they tend to step away. But what we've got with boxers is we have older boxers who are still, you know, getting in the ring and fighting themselves, fighting fights. And one thing I have no problem with it either is specifically that Ricardo Mayorga and Shane Mosley, they aren't taking money out of some young kids' mouth or aren't taking an opportunity out of some up-and-coming boxers' mouth. They're fighting each other. It's like an old-timer circuit. So I see no harm in that at all. And the people that Roy Jones is fighting, just for them to have an opportunity to step in a ring with him is an honor. So, again,
right.
I see no harm and these guys fighting past their sell date.
Guys, they say that they're going to be fighting October 3rd at in Roy Jones' adopted country, Russia.
Yeah. One thing about Roy Jones is, I mean, he's fighting journeymen now, but these journeymen feel that they have a key to victory with Roy a lot. And they do. To be honest, they do. Roy, he's not elite, obviously, anymore. And he's another guy, as I was talking earlier about Shane Mosley, to where when his timing and reflexes went, then his boxing, that's, you saw that his boxing technique, that's where it lay at. Roy, he's going to entertain, because the fight's going to go one of two ways. Roy's either going to get knocked out, or he's going to shine on the guy, entertain the crowd. Either which way to entertain him.
Yeah, Roy's going to knock this kid out once he fights him. The fact of the matter is, in using the term journeyman, I think I use the term journeyman because I respect all boxers. But the fact of the matter is that his opposition has been absolutely dreadful. It's been absolutely dreadful. And he's been knocking these guys out in the second round. And, you know, a lot of these guys are, as they're getting up, want to, you know, take pictures with Roy Jones. So, I mean, he hasn't been fighting anyone of note whatsoever. And again, to even call these guys journeymen is kind of disrespectful to what we know as the term journeyman. They're just not good fighters on a world-class level or even on a domestic level. So for Roy, essentially, he's just going over there and putting on a show. It's no different than a singer going to Moscow to sing. And, you know, one thing Roy said is one of the reasons why he wanted citizenship is because the Russian fans love not only his boxing but his music. He's going over there and boxed and put on rap shows for them. So, you know, again, they're happy to see him, and it's not hurting anyone in America, especially those who don't care to see him at this point in time. So, and if he can keep, you know, defeating cannon fodder and earn his way to a title because of his name, you know, more luck to him. But once you get there, it gets a little bit more dangerous, as he's seen, you know, four or five times in the past.
Yeah, the more Roy's, I mean, he's still quick. He's still going to be quicker than a lot of guys. He's still going to be hit. Well, he still hits pretty hard for his. Roy, he's just, the more that even deteriorates, I mean, the more some guys are going to have a chance against Roy.
Yeah, but you know, Zito, you know yourself, Zito, when you're sparring, you know, 25 and 26-year-old guys on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but these guys are kind of new to the game. Even though they may have more athleticism at this stage in their life than you, they can't even come close to hitting you just because they don't know how to attack you without, you know, being countered or being hit. And so you take it to a world-class level with the Roy Jones, and he's kind of facing the same type of opposition, except he has that still with a lot of these guys, has that athletic edge over them. So, again, like you said, when he's facing a certain level of competition, he can look really good. When he faces a, you know, competition that's a little bit tougher, you know, that's not necessarily going to fold as soon as he hits him, even a guy that he's beat, you'll start to see his weaknesses. You'll start to see that he can't move the way he used to. He lolls on the ropes, you know, to catch his breath. And all the things that have really, you know, gotten him knocked out in the past, he still does. It's just that he's fighting guys that can't take advantage of it.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you guys think about the upcoming Broner fight? You know, Adrian Broner is going on October 3rd.
Excuse me. I'm looking more forward to the co-feature. I believe it's Edna Cherry fighting for a world title on that.
That's right. The undercard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that. Honestly, I think I'm looking more forward to that fight against Jesus Daza. I think that's more of a 50-50 fight. I don't know the opponent that Adrian Broner's fighting. One thing I will say about Adrian Broner, his team, Al Haymon, he's fought, you know, to a certain extent, you know, a pretty credible opposition. He has a solid resume. He has a pretty solid resume. And, you know, I can't think of another guy who necessarily at welterweight who has Sean Porter and Marcus Madonna on their resume. So, you know, I think credit has to be given that he will go ahead and fight, you know, top-notch guys. With that said, I think that this fight is not that. He's just coming off of a tough fight. I think this fight is to essentially get him a title to put him in a position for another big fight.
What weight is this fight happening at?
140. It's for the
good.
The IBF belt that Lamont Peterson lost when he lost to Danny Garcia when they fought over the catchweight. They said if Peterson lost, he would lose his belt. Yeah, so he would be stripped.
Yeah.
So it's for that belt.
Yeah. Adrian Broner, his best weight is 140. He doesn't need to move up anymore. And I think what happens is he'll move up, I think, just because he may catch himself, you know, he gets a little pudgy in training, you know, when he's not training for a fight. And I think it's all about, you know, what the amount of pudginess he wants. It's as simple as that. Because a guy, I mean, when he's 140, he can do a lot of good things. He can do a lot of good things from 147 to maybe 144, but at the same time, they're not as effective against a guy who's weighing the same. So I think that maybe that little 5 to 7 pound differential, that allows him to move better, even allows him to react better.
I think it's going to be you said it first, right? The undercard is going to be a better fight than the draw.
Well, I don't know. I'm looking more forward to it. I don't know if it's going to be a better fight. You just never know what happens until two guys get in the ring.
I think it's Edner is from. Let's see what he had to say this week. Edner said he was looking forward to the fight and he's excited. And then Pedroza says he's great to get back, happy to get back onto Showtime, but he wants to defend his title and he knows it's on the way to superstardom. Well, I sort of think that Edner is going to come out of this possibly with the belt, another belt.
I can see why both guys want to fight each other, though. There are certain things to each other that the other one can take very good advantage of. Edna's, he's a strong guy. He's a strong, tough guy. And Edna, he hits hard. I mean, he's there to bring the fight. And Pedraza, in that sense, I don't think matches up to Edna at all. And I think Pedraza, he's a bit more measured, technical. And it's going to depend a lot on his calmness, how this fight goes. And I think Edner has the potential to maybe rattle his calmness a bit. So that's what makes it interesting.
You know, and Edner has an experience edge.
Yeah.
Pedraza is But one thing I would say about Pedraza, he's probably a little bit more smooth with his technique than Edner. Edner is obviously much more of a killer in the ring than Pedraza. So it's really going to come down to with what Pedraza can withstand and if he can keep Edner off of him. That's really all it comes down to.
and mentally, really mentally keep Edner off of him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because mentally, Edner, I mean, when the fight kind of settles in, nobody gets smoothed out, Pedraza doesn't get smoothed out, Edner's still too tough for that, I think. But
he gets up. If you knock him down, he gets up. And Edner throws everything so hard, too. And I think there's a certain intensity he brings. And like you said, Zito, it's capable of wearing, certain opponents mentally down, even before the physical toll starts to get to them. And if Pedraza has the goods, then he won't be broken mentally. It'll be just a matter of can he execute his game plan.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we're joined by the inimitable and always enjoyable Dr. Chris.
Always enjoyable.
Hello, guys.
How you doing, Dr. Chris?
Just done work. Did a lot of work today up here. Getting rid of my pneumonia.
Yeah,
it was
good.
Nice and hot.
Yeah, we had a great day.
I burned them bugs.
It wasn't too hot, though.
Burned them bugs out. Felt good today. You know? Listen, you know, all the times that guy's been on our show, I have never seen him fight one time.
Really?
Edgar. I have never seen him fight.
You know, he hasn't really been on TV in quite some time, actually. So that would be one reason. He's been fighting a lot of fights that were on the undercards of television fights, but he wasn't on the televised portion.
He's got a main event coming up then, huh?
Yeah, co-feature on Showtime, October 3rd.
Okay.
He has televised a lot of times early in his career. Like I remember Zito and I seen him fight. We saw the Paulie Malignaggi fight and the Tim Bradley fight.
Yeah, and the Tim Bradley fight.
Yeah.
Did he fight Malignaggi?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He fought Malignaggi and he fought Tim Bradley.
I might have seen him then. It might be a long time ago though.
Oh yeah, it was some years back.
Been around a while then, huh? You think Malignaggi is going to hang him up now or what?
I think that's it for Malignaggi.
Yeah,
but you know what, Dr. Chris? I think a promoter, especially a promoter of a welterweight, they look at Malignaggi as a safe gauge for a fighter who's looking to transition like a UFC into the welterweight division. He's a guy with a name, former titleist, and he's a guy who's not going to hurt you with his punches. You know what I mean? So
he's a safe guy to fight. You know, when you're working your fighter up to potential championship.
You never know if somebody throws another name at him that offers him money that he says, I got to go ahead and take this fight.
Yeah.
But, he all but admitted retirement after that Danny Garcia fight.
Hey, guys, we're joined by one of my best friends, Mr. Edner Cherry. Edner, how you doing tonight?
He is. Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
We're doing good. We're doing good. We had a couple questions that Zito needed to ask you.
Okay.
Oh, first of all, I want to apologize. My phone ran hot off, so I had to go off the air a little early last week.
Okay.
But I did want to ask you, what do you think about your opponent, Pedraza, and what do you think technically you have to do to win the fight?
Oh, you know what? In this fight, it's not an easy fight. I'm not going in an easy fight at all. You know what I'm saying? Jose Pizarro, he's a tough fighter, and he's a champion for a reason, and going in that ring October 3rd, I know I'm in a tough fight, so we training hard for that. So my plan, our plan is try to fight in the inside, try to stay on pressure from the beginning, and just make it an ugly fight, you know what I'm saying? Just stay on because he have the long arms, and you know, for him to be 21, you know, 20 and 0, you know, because of his reach, he know how to use his reach, you know, because he take advantage of it. So October 3rd, and you know, I will try to take that away from him. I don't think he have been with somebody who have really hit him. I don't think he have really been in a tough fight. But October 3rd, he will see, and because I know for me, I know I'm in a tough fight, so that's why I'm training hard, because I want to hear the new IBF champion of the world.
Yes, sir.
Now we were talking before you got on the air about mental pressure, and can he withstand more or less the mental pressure?
What's that again?
We were talking about, can Pedraza withstand the mental pressure that you're going to put on him, that you're definitely going to put on him?
You know what? I don't think so, because when you look at 20-0, look at the people that he fought, the record sound good. It look pretty, and first of all, I love fighting these guys that's undefeated, because in that fight there will a lot will be running through their mind. I don't want my O to go. I don't want to lose my belt. So much pressure is on them. And you know, just like a couple years back, when I fought Monty Mezaclay, he came in undefeated and he think he was gonna beat me. And sure enough, hey, I had to do what I had to do, and I'm not the type of fighter that's scared to go in there and mix it up and do what I have to do. But I think the pressure will be a big factor in this fight, because, yes, he's a good little boxer, whatever, because it's like, oh, you know what I'm saying? Whatever fighter he's been with, you know what I'm saying? Style make fights. So,
right.
20-0, I don't think he's been in tough fights.
Yeah, Edgar, we were talking about the fight. This is Ty, before you came on. And, you know, one thing we were saying is that, you know, Pedraza has some, you know, has some pretty good skill set. Like you said, he likes to box behind his jab, stay at range. He's a smooth little boxer. One thing that hasn't, you know, there are questions, obviously, especially with a guy who's only had 20 fights, especially undefeated guy who's had 20 fights, who's been somewhat, you know, taken to a title shot at least.
Yeah.
And the questions that we have about Pedraza is, okay, you look like you have a pretty decent skill set, but when you're not able to fight your fight and the fight is not going the way that you want it to go, do you fold from the pressure or do you rise to the occasion? We know what you do, because we've seen you knock down, get up, and keep fighting and win. So are you the guy who's going to be asking Pedraza these questions? And what kind of answers do you expect him to have? What have you seen from him that you think could trouble you or that you could take advantage of?
The thing that I know of is pressure. Just make it an ugly fight, because if I had to stay on the outside, he will use that range on me. And, you know, he's about 5'9", somewhere around there. And so that's my game plan. But you know what I'm saying? It's like I cannot let him keep me on the outside. And I know for a fact that night he will be running. I guarantee you he will be running, and he will not stay in the pocket. So for me and the team, we have to be smart. Probably he'll try to catch me coming in and use the boxing skill. But our plan is the fight,
yeah.
Because for a champion, you have to go in and take it. You know what I'm saying? You have to go in and knock him out and take it.
Specifically to go ahead and put that money in the bank with those body shots early on and try to slow those legs down?
Yeah, yes, sir. That's the main factor. It's slowed down with the body shot. And, you know, we'll try to put in everything that we know, all of the wisdom that we know, you know, working with Dan Birmingham, you have to look at everyone that comes out of Dan Birmingham gym, really who really want the world title, they became a world champion. Winky Wright, Jeff Lacy, Keith Thurman, everybody that came out of that gym who had a chance to fight for world title, they walked away with that belt. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So Dan Birmingham know what it takes to push the fighter, you know, to go in there and take that belt.
Mm-hmm. Dan has had a long list of winners out, including,
yeah,
you know, like you said, Jeff Lacy and Winky,
and
Keith Thurman.
And yeah. I think he's with Chad Dawson.
You know
what? I want to be one of the few fighters from Florida, from the Bay Area. You know, so you got Tauber, you got Nate Campbell, Jeff Lacy, Winky, Thurman, and you know, all these guys. I want to be in that picture. You know, I want to be there where I could say, man, y'all, you know what? We became a world champion once in our lifetime. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it could happen. You know what, Frank? You know, I've been holding on for a long time. I never quit it, but I hung in there. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
You know, there was like a lot of people would have been quit, but, you know, this thing didn't happen by chance. This wasn't by luck, but it was a blessing.
Yeah.
This was an opportunity because this is how I feed my family. This is a job for me.
But
you know,
wouldn't
right
have the opportunity
now,
if you weren't working towards it all the time, never
yeah.
giving up.
Yeah, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And this is my job, and that's all. This is what I'm going to say. Fajardo is standing in the way of my money, the way of my family. This is how I feed my family. And you know, hey, I'm being dead serious. I don't care how much money he got in the bank. I don't care how his lifestyle is, but he's standing in my way. I don't care how good he is. I don't care how hard he's training, but I'm training as hard as he is. But you know, he just standing in my way. That's all. October 3rd.
And then with the fight, really, you know, going to – go ahead. No, please, go Dr. Chris.
No, I was going to ask Edner. I said, we know what type of fight you have to fight to win. Now,
yeah.
Does this guy have a good counter uppercut or right hand? What's he throw? He's obviously fought guys with your style before. How does he fight them? What's he fighting?
Oh, you know what? You know, he loves the stuff, you know, throw stuff in the inside, uppercuts. You know, he worked the body great. You know, because of his long reach. And, you know, then what you have to look at, he never been hit. You know?
Yeah.
You know, but I think that's what, you know, his jab and, you know, he working the inside and, you know, which is good. I mean, just like what I said, Jose Posada, he's a good fighter. I'm not taking nothing away from him. And, you know, in my mind, I know I'm in a tough fight. So by that, I'm training hard because this is not my first time being in a tough fight. There's nothing new for me. So it ain't like that night I'll be all frozen up and like, oh, man, this is my first time being in front of the camera. This is my first tough fight. No. Now he had to worry about that. I mean, you know, you have some people that win the title but never been in a tough fight.
Yeah.
Right or I'm wrong?
Yeah, you know what? He'll be the best opponent he's ever faced, but he won't be the best opponent you've ever faced.
Yeah.
And you know, just looking at this fight, one thing that I know is that you know you'll be able to. The fight's really going to come down to your feet versus his feet. And again, Pedraza's a good boxer, but part of the reason why I've seen him be so good is because he's been allowed to stay at range and no one's cut off the ring and forced him to fight for long stretches of time. Like you said, when he's been pressured, he's thrown a nice little counter uppercut. He knows how to work the body, throw a shot, and turn his opponent. But I haven't seen him been forced to fight for long stretches at a time. He's usually been able to just work at his distance. And a big part of it is because nobody's cutting the ring off on him. Is that something you guys are working on specifically in training to make the ring smaller and smaller on this kid?
Yes, sir. You know, just like I said, we're working on everything. We're working on movement. We're working on staying in his face, and you know, but being smart about it, you know.
Right.
But you know, you have a way to approach a fighter like that, but don't be reckless. Be smart about it, because you know, first, second, third round, fourth round, whatever. We fresh, you know what I'm saying? But it's like keeping the tempo, keeping it going, being in the fight, then while we in there, and that's when we need the work. That'll be our fight. When we in there, we just work and rip, and, you know, just don't let them use that reach, you know?
Dagger, can you tell our fans how you're preparing for this fight? I mean, who are you? Do you have your sparring, of course, but is there anybody in the gym other than the guys you usually spar with?
Some of them helping me out, and I'll just keep that with to me in the camp, and you know, then beside that, you know what? This is the first camp, Frank. This is the first camp that you know I'm taking it serious. I'm doing different things that I have never did. Driving every day. Normally I don't drive that much, but I'm driving Monday through Saturday. So it's like the days I don't go to St. Pete, I'm in a Tampa. I'm going to Dr. D, and you know, he's helping me out. Then we going in the hyperbaric chamber. Like we going in like for a couple of hours, and you know, just you know, to hear my body and this and that, and you know, and we working on different things, and it's you know, people just opening their doors for them, people just opening their hands and adding,
nice.
We want to help you, and every little door that's open, I'm walking into it because I think that's how people become champion, because they walk into the little door that people offer them, and you know, I'm just taking their help.
Yep. I don't blame you. And we know, you know, you got four guys here that are in your corner all the time, whether we're there or not. Mentally, we'll be there.
Yeah, yes, sir.
So it's always a pleasure when we talk to you to hear the intensity in your voice, to see the joy with you and Elizabeth and the kids. But you know, I know that this is going to be another good fight for you, and we're going to have you on here with the belt, and we may even get together and take a picture of the belt and put it on our website as our lead.
Yeah, yes, sir.
That'd be something good for us.
Yeah, and I just want to appreciate everyone that's been in my corner since day one, since I started my career, and even through the losses and through the ups and downs that I went through, and you know, all of y'all still stuck with me, and y'all never give up on me. And you know, for myself, I never give up on myself. So you know, and I just want to thank all of y'all for what y'all have done, because it's not only me that caused myself to be, you know what I'm saying, to come this far, because it's everybody that pushing me. You know, people like you, Frank, and you know you. You know, putting me on the radio and giving me a call, and these other people that's in my community, and they cheer me on, and you know, give me a little advice, and it kind of motivates me, and you know, seeing these kids, and you know, everybody is a part of this. You know, when I become a world champion, I'm not the only champion. Everybody that's in my corner, the fans, all of us are champions.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Well, guys, do we have any other questions for Edner? I know he's busy there.
Edner, does this guy fight the same style every fight? Have you watched any films of when he fights a guy of your stature and size. Have you ever seen him?
You know what?
You know, can he come off with a surprise? I mean,
yeah, like the only thing he does, he switch up.
Yeah.
But he's a orthodox, but he switch up. I think when he's in trouble or he kind of, you know, in whatever, but he switch up to southpaw. But beside that's about it. Besides being a little good.
So that's his only surprise. Turn into a southpaw.
Yeah, he just switch up. Yeah.
That you know what, to me that always indicated the guy wasn't doing good with his best style, so he tries something else. That means he's looking for a way out or a way to turn the fight around. That's always a good sign, I feel. You know, the only guy that had both sides mastered, right and left, was Marvin Hagler in my lifetime. He could fight equally as good left-handed as right-handed. I've seen him change in mid-round. I watched him fight Benny Briscoe. And Benny would charge, get him into a corner, cut the ring off. He would go back fighting right-handed, and when Benny would cut the ring off, he'd turn around and jab and go out the other side.
Yeah.
With a right-hand jab. I mean, he fought Briscoe 15 rounds, I think it was. He didn't lose a round.
Yeah.
And there was nothing Benny could do about it. He was a step slower than Hagler. But he's the only guy I ever... You know, that never resorted to that when he was in trouble. He just tried it.
Yeah.
He could turn that on in a second. You know, in the mid round, if he was getting crowded into a corner, come out fighting the other. You know, turn around, jab the other way, and back right out. And I'm just wondering if this guy has that experience. If you've ever seen him do that.
Not that good of experience. You know, but you just switch up and you know. And, you know, I give him that. I mean, he's a pretty
good guy. Yeah, the driver doesn't switch that fluidly.
He just steps back
and switches. You know,
Pedraza
does everything well, but usually under comfortable, you know, situations.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing. So and if you're not comfortable, he can work well on the inside sometimes. He rolls with the shoulder a bit. He could do it well when he's comfortable. When he's not comfortable, he can't do it well.
Yeah.
So.
Great.
That was going to be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing it. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
When do you, when will you be going up to the...
Being honest, I don't know. Just when they just tell me, like, hey, Edna, you'll be over there for, like, 3-4 days out before the fight or, you know, because of the press conference and this and that. And, but, you know, I don't even know. I don't even know. So you know, it, you know what I'm saying, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying, I'm just ready to rock and roll and put a good show on.
Great. Whether we really appreciate you taking the time away from your family. You've always been a tremendous friend of ours, and we'll always be there in your corner. I will be up Thursday or Wednesday if you're going to be in St. Pete. I told Dan I'd be up to see you guys.
On Wednesday I don't be there at the gym. I'm there Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. And Saturday.
All right, I'll see you on Tuesday.
Tuesday, I'll be spawned. So, you know what I'm saying?
Good.
You will see a little action, whatever, and, you know.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, yes, sir.
You guys have any more questions for Edna?
Guys, just want to wish you good luck.
We'll talk to you.
Yeah. Well, again.
And the new.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the way we're going to bring you in the next time. We're going to have
Ty
bring you in.
And the new
champion,
baby, cherry bomb.
Yes, sir. Man, I'm so excited, man. I'm very excited, man. You know.
And we're excited for you. You definitely deserve it. Definitely deserve it. We're praying that you bring her home.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay, Edner, well, thanks again. Appreciate it. See you. say hello to Elizabeth and the children and give her our love.
Okay, thank you very much, and y'all have a great weekend, and thank y'all very much for having me on the show, and
okay.
We will talk again pretty soon.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, y'all take care.
All right, thanks.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, Ty, what do you think of Jab Zuda coming back in on the 10th of September?
You know what, I think Zab is it's funny because he's another one of those guys like Zito talked about that was supremely gifted, but as his gifts failed, you see that he had some lapses in technique, which caused him to lose certain fights. And he's another guy that, again, he still can fight at a certain level, and if he can do it, why not? Why not make your money doing what you love?
Now, what do you think, Chris?
Well, I think that he, you know, he's just what like Malignaggi. He steps in there when he can make a quick buck if he's not fighting a terribly tough opponent. I mean, his skills are not going to be any better than they were in the past, and we all know what he can do and what he can't do.
Yeah.
And he's one of those guys. He's probably getting in the way of a guy that's trying to move up, and if he steps over his Zabuda, he's a contender now for a title shot. I don't know what he's got left. I don't know what he's got left mentally and physically. I haven't seen him.
You know,
in a while.
And it's funny. Dr. Chris brings up a pretty good point that all of a sudden, if a guy were to step up and step over and beat a Zab Judah, he would be looked at as an up and coming contender. But yet, beating Zab Judah at this point really doesn't mean much. Remember, Paulie Malignaggi was the last time Zab Judah was in the ring. He lost a one sided decision to Paulie Malignaggi, in which Paulie Malignaggi was backing him up almost the entire fight. So, again, a victory over Zab Judah will do well for, a certain fighter's, a younger fighter's, career. But in essence, it's really not a great gauge of how good that fighter is. I think that's a very valid point Dr. Chris makes.
Yeah, we'll see what he's got left. He's got to go to the gym and work hard, maybe he's trying to come back too. He's trying to get back in the picture again. You don't know what he's thinking. Maybe he's not an opponent anymore. Maybe he thinks he can come back. Maybe instead of just being an opponent, be curious. These guys are curious. Sometimes for 5 or 6 rounds they'll come back, look great, and then it's not working. Or it's not. They quit. They get disillusioned and they bow out. You know what I mean? Some guys, it's a curious time in his career. Is he fighting at 47 or at 42?
Oh, Zab is what, 30, 30, 35?
Yeah, like 35, 36.
Yeah, 36 maybe. Floyd's 38, Zab's 36.
Uh-huh. Well, that's late for him. It's going to be hard for him to make that weight, I think. He's been fighting bigger guys.
Zab's always been
see.
Like a head case guy. He's
you don't know
been
when
like
he's going to quit. You don't know what he's going to do. Yeah, sometimes sometimes he's looking for the exit door. You don't know what the hell. Then the next time you see him, he's a world beater. You don't know. He has been up and down more than anybody I know. I mean, he's a puzzle to me. He's a puzzle. I can't figure him the hell out. He's been more ups and downs and more guys in his corner and trying to bring him back. And, Christ, I remember seeing Tyson in his corner one time. Way back. Gotta be years ago. Mike was in there and they were trying to, he's a puzzle. To me, he's a puzzle. Let's see what happens. I'm anxious to see Tyson Fury. That's what I want to see. That's my up and coming. I want to see Big Tyson, the ballerina. Tyson, the ballerina. If you listen to Eddie Chambers, he's a ballerina in the ring. That's going to be
great.
Cool. We'll see. Oh, God. I was talking to my buddy about, he's been a great fight fan all his life. We talk all the time on the phone. I was talking about Lemieux and Triple G.
Yeah.
He said that Lemieux don't have a shot. I said, I don't know. He's a tough son of a gun.
Yeah, he has
and
two
I said, there's going to be a lot of good fights coming up. A lot of good fights. That's going to be a matter of will. Who's going to have the most will?
You know, I just think an exciting fight doesn't always mean necessarily a competitive fight. And sometimes I think people conflate the two. And I don't. I think this could be an exciting fight, but I don't think it'll necessarily be a competitive fight.
It might be early competitive, but as the fight settles down, if it gets to that point, then it's going to stop getting to that point.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
A lot of curiosity there.
Yeah.
As to what Triple G is going to do. I think he's going to get stung in this fight. I think he's going to get hit a couple of times. I think his chin's going to be tested. You know?
Well, he's definitely facing the hardest puncher he's faced. To me, the problem is even though they'll use a very hard puncher, he's just not the better boxer either, though. You know, Golovkin hits just as hard, if not harder, and he's a much better boxer. He's just a better boxer. And
more
so consistent. And I think that even though Lemieux, you know, is very capable of knocking Golovkin out if he catches him with the right punch, I think his problem is going to be trying to close the distance to get. First of all, he's very left hook happy. He doesn't use his right as much. And if you're going to throw the left hook, you got to be a lot closer than you need to be to throw the right. And so he's going to have to close that distance. And I just think I think as good as this matchup looks on paper, I think when you delve a little bit further into it, I think a lot of what Lemieux does kind of plays into Golovkin's hands. So I think in certain ways, he's kind of tailor-made for Golovkin. I'm not saying he's tailor-made for him, but in certain ways, a lot of what he does plays right into Golovkin's advantages. And as we've seen, when Golovkin has an advantage, he pulls the curtain on you. So I don't see a competitive fight necessarily for a long stretch at all. I see it could be a firefight, but if it's a firefight that ends early one way, simple as that.
It's a matter of lightning in the bottle versus lightning in the cloud. The lightning in the clouds can always get to the lightning in the bottle, but the lightning in the bottle has to take an airplane to go all the way. It has to go through all of that trouble to get up to the clouds. So, I mean, once it's a matter of that kind of tells you what more or less should happen. But that's just paper.
Yeah, paper burns.
Yeah,
lightning in the bottle.
I've seen the Triple G carried into the later rounds, and he's just as effective in the 10th round, 11th round, 12th round as he is in the second or third. He fights the whole 12 rounds. I mean, he's a threat the whole 12 rounds, and I don't know if he can discourage Lemieux earlier, and, you know, if he does, he'll definitely, you know, come on strong in the later rounds.
Thing I've noticed about Triple G is he really, you know, I noticed this in the Kasim Uma fight, who you know, was the last person to take him, and unless Kasim Uma took him 10. And Kasim Uma is a guy who can take a hell of a punch and who doesn't stop punching. And one thing I've noticed about Lemieux is that he varies his offense to allow himself to take breaks when he needs to. So he doesn't always throw his fastball. You know, so during that fight, he would take steps back because Kasim Uma was constantly coming forward, and he would take a step back, and he would just touch him here and there, and just turn him. So he knew when to, you know, he would let off every now and then, but he knew how to pace himself to maintain his power throughout the whole fight. So he's a very clever fighter, and that's the other thing. I don't think Lemieux has the fight IQ Golovkin has either.
Probably not. You're right there.
Even the ring generalship. Golovkin has amazing ring generalship. Like, he can determine where he's going to attack you. He's not going to say, I'm going to take a chance here. I'm going to lean in. I'm going to lunge here. No, what he's going to do, he's going to put his feet in position to where he's going to maximize his punching power. And he's not going to let loose without that. What he does is he's often in that position. That's what makes him so good. He's often and to often be in a position against a moving target, is you have to have some sort of boxing, you know, high boxing IQ.
And the thing about Golovkin, this is what I noticed with the Kasim Uma fight, he doesn't have the quickest feet, but he has, you know, maybe the most educated feet. His feet are very educated. And you know, one thing I always talk about is Golovkin is always in a position to punch or defend. He's always basically, for the most part, you know, a perfect balance. And one thing he was doing against Uma would, you know, they say, well, can Golovkin fight going backwards? Uma wasn't making him fight going backwards. He would push him backwards. Golovkin would, you know, take his steps back and, you know, throw his little punches. And then he would just hit him hard and turn him. I mean, so he can fight going backwards because he's not going to go straight backwards. He knows the game too well for that, and he's too well schooled to do that. He knows how to turn his opponents when they're trying to apply pressure on him.
And when he goes backwards, it's dangerous for an opponent to just kind of come in on him because, he has a very good left hook. You don't want to navigate yourself into that. So, I mean, he has the power, and he's educated enough to be, when he does go back, he's still in punching position. He has proper balance.
And he has good timing. And he has good timing.
Exactly. So, I mean, a lot of you can't just go in lunging on him when he's taking his step back. And he will punch while you're punching. I mean, that's another thing. He will counter, but he'll punch at the same time you're punching. So, who was it, Daniel Gill? Yeah.
Daniel Gill hit him with the right just as he knocked Daniel Gill out. Now, see, You don't want to do that with Lemieux. You don't want to trade shots with Lemieux. That's a little different story.
You don't want to do that with Lemieux unless you do that to Lemieux.
Yeah. Better make sure you get there first.
Well, you know, when you're moving in, when you're moving in all the time and you catch a shot, it hurts like hell. You know, you're moving and you know, walking into a punch hurts like hell. And Golovkin can stop on a dime and throw that left hook low and hit you on the chin with it. He's almost as good at it as Sugar Ray. Sugar Ray, going backwards, had the best left hook of any fighter I've ever seen. He could turn on that front foot and hit you with a left hook and knock you silly. He knocked Gene Fulmer out, who never was off his feet, with a lead hook while he was moving backwards. He stopped, he saw the opening, he put his left foot down, boom, knocked him colder than hell. And he did that. Golovkin's got a little bit of that in him, a little bit, not a hell of a lot, but he can do it, I think. You know,
you give him the compliment, you just pull it back ever so slightly.
Not a whole lot, but
yeah. So we'll see if he can, you know, look that good. If he can, Lemieux's going to press him. There's no question about it. And if he can get that left hook lead. Because you can throw that left hook lead at the retreat. You can throw that left hook while you're retreating, and you're not in danger of getting hit yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy coming in's got the danger. And then he's got that deadly right hand right behind it. So he is going to be tough to beat. I don't know when the hell's ever going to happen. But this is going to be an interesting fight. You guys, I'm not as 100% sold on it as you guys are, you know, with Golovkin, but... I think it's going to be Golovkin's toughest fight, you know, so far.
I liken this fight a lot to the Canelo-Kirkland fight. I think this fight is very similar, you know what I mean? You have two guys who can punch very hard, but one guy who just does everything better. And I think, you know, I'm not saying the results will be similar, but I think when I look at it on paper, and again, paper burns, we talk about that, but when I look at it on paper, it's very similar in that sense that you have the obvious potential for a firefight, but in your heart of hearts, you know one guy is really just a class above the other guy, though. It's just that this other guy presents a threat that you're not used to seeing this particular fighter have to face. But in your heart, you know that this fighter is a class above him. It was the same with Canelo Kirkland. You knew Canelo was a class above Kirkland, but we had never seen Canelo face that type of ferocity before, and that was... You know, the question, can he deal with that ferocity? We know he's better than Kirkland, but can he deal with Kirkland's ferocity? It's the same thing with Lemieux-Golovkin. We know Golovkin's better than Lemieux. We know that. But can he deal with the power and the intensity that Lemieux brings? That's what we want to see. If you think he can deal with that, then I think you already know who the better fighter is. So,
Truthfully, I think this fight's going to look a lot like Foreman Frazier. One.
That looks kind of like a car accident. with one person driving the car and the other person walking.
If
there was one guy in the ring that Frazier should never fight, it was George Foreman. He should never fought him. He had nothing to gain. He just couldn't overpower and roughhouse George Foreman. He was too big and strong. And it was a bad opponent, whether it was a manager or his trainer, whoever talked Frazier into making that match had a bad decision.
Wasn't Foreman undisputed number one at that time? Wasn't he the number one guy?
No, not really.
He wasn't.
He had lost, I'm trying to go back and think of his record.
Now he was undefeated when he fought
undefeated
Frazier.
With the first Frazier fight.
Well, yeah, he was undefeated until he fought Ali. I think he was when he fought Ali, he was like 32-0 with 30 knockouts.
He was going to have to fight
Foreman eventually, because excuse me, Foreman was starting to create. You know, he was knocking everybody up, but Foreman hadn't really fought. Oh yes, he did. He was beating contenders. He was destroying everybody. Yeah, I mean, Frazier was going to have to fight him. There was going to be a public mandate eventually. I mean, Foreman was.
Hate to break it up, but we're at the end of our hour, and they're just blinking here at me. Yeah. But, Chris, I appreciate you coming on again. All right, Frank.
All right.
I hope you're feeling better, and sounds like you're getting better.
Yeah, I'm feeling better. I'm not hoarse anymore. My voice is back. I'm ready to start singing again. You know?
There you go.
Anybody wants to hire me, you know? I got another career coming. All right, guys. See you next week.
Hey, how's it going, Dr. Chris?
Take it easy, Dr. Chris.
All right, buddy. Bye now. All right.
Ty, you want to lead us out?
Hey, it's been a great show. It was nice having Edner Cherry on. Of course, we're praying and hoping that he brings the belt home. We try not to be biased here on Fighting Words, but we love that kid, and we wish him the best. It was great again talking to Dr. Chris Butsito. See you guys next week. Bob's our co-pilot. Jay?
Well, I definitely want to thank Edner. Wish him good luck coming up in his fight. Want to thank Dr. Chris, always entertaining and insightful. I want to thank you guys every week. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch.
Okay, I appreciate everybody that came on. They're tremendous people. We also want to say thank you to our listeners. Our numbers were up again this month, so we really appreciate everybody listening. And I appreciate everything you guys put into the shows, because if it wasn't for you guys and the preparation that we do, we wouldn't have such great shows and great people listening. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please just give them a wink, a handshake, anything. Let them know that you know that they're there. It's appreciated by everybody in uniform. These programs are also dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Culcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Patrolman Detective Ricky Bell, Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogel, Longwood P Police Department, Chief Whip Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Vine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Firefighter Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department. Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department. Patrolman Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep
you.
Bob. We love you. I miss you.